Welcome to Top Shelf at the Merrick Library with your host, Carol Ann Tack.
Welcome back to Top Shelf at Merrick Library. I thank you all once again for spending your time with your favorite podcast, Top Shelf. Today's guest is a debut author, but is no stranger to writing and to all things books and the literary world. Itaf Rum is the daughter of Palestinian immigrants. She was born and raised in Brooklyn, New York. Shout out Brooklyn, my hometown. She has a master's of art in American and British literature, as well as an undergraduate degree, in philosophy and in English composition, which I don't want her to even see this script that I'm holding in my hand. Because I can only imagine what she would do to it. Itaf is also a Book of the Month Club ambassador, where she showcases all her favorite selections, reading selections each month. And if you follow social media and you love all things books, then you absolutely know our guest because she runs the incredibly successful, beautiful, and sublime Instagram account called Books and Beans. So write that down because you're going to want to follow that on Instagram right away. And having said all that, I welcome Itaf Rum to the Top Shelf at Merrick Library podcast. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Carol, for having me. I'm honored.
I really appreciate you being here. We actually became, this whole thing started because we were doing, librarians do this thing called Friday Reads. What are we reading on a Friday? And I had just picked up a galley of A Woman Is No Man, which is the title of our book. And I have to say, it is taking the library world by storm. And I really can't wait for readers to get hold of it. It comes out on March 5th. And what I will do is put a link in the podcast page so that you guys can place your hold, place your reserve, and get it as soon as it comes out. You can get it also on the bookshelves. It'll be in the bookstores. But in the meantime, I will have it. I'll also have a link to Itaf's her homepage so that you guys can order it if you would like to. This book is being compared to The Kite Runner, Americana, and Everything I've Never Told You, but honestly, it's unlike anything I've ever read because of its frank treatment of relationships, and especially this family relationship. It's about three generations of Palestinian American women, and it takes place in Palestine in 1990, but then we flash forward to Brooklyn of 2008. And the women at the heart of this book are just, they're so beautifully written, and so the whole book is just gorgeous. It is a heart-wrenching story. It's sort of it's a book about a traditional Arab culture. It's heart-wrenching. It's got love, intrigue, hope, and courage. Like I said before, it resonates with women from all backgrounds. And that's what I find most compelling about it, because there are degrees of these strict traditional cultures that we all face in our backgrounds. I'm Italian American, so some of this I can relate to in the sense of what sort of a woman is traditionally required or expected to do. What can you tell us about how you got here? Because I feel this is such a brave thing to undertake, to write this so clearly and so beautifully that it's resonating with all of us. And I can't wait for you readers to get your hands on it. It's going to be a big one for 2019. So I'll go back to my question. Tell me about your journey. What made you sort of want to reach out and write these women?
Well, there's a twofold answer to that. When I first started writing, it was when I was teaching these diverse authors and voices like The Kite Runner, Americana, Jhumpa Lahiri. I was teaching all of these diverse voices and then realizing that the Arab American voice is very underrepresented in bookstores and in libraries. And I wanted to give our women and our people the chance to express themselves and to have a voice in the bookshelves that we, that I visit, that my students visit. I could never find our story. But on the other hand, another reason why I started writing was because at the time I was also a mother. I was raised in Brooklyn in a very strict, family. I got married young. And so I started to understand that pattern, the relationship between mother and daughter, and the values and the expectations of womanhood that mothers pass on to their daughters and what they teach them about being a woman and what they teach them about, you know, living in life and their values and their worth. And so as a mother now, as a young mother, there are so many questions that I wanted to ask myself and find answers to. And I felt that the best way to do that was to write about these patterns and to kind of recreate the narrative of my own life by understanding my past and where I came from.
It's funny because I never really, I mean, I always think about my own upbringing. My mother and I were 20 years, almost 19 years apart. So it was never even a question that I wouldn't go to college or my sister and I wouldn't go to school and that we would work. And we're talking about the 60s. So it's just interesting when I was reading this, how the opportunities, it could have been very different. My mother could have, you know, would have, I don't want to say traditional, but it could have been a very traditional marriage. She did marry very young. She had her children very young. But yet she was always working. She loved to work. She wanted to be in the workforce and contribute as an educator, which she did beautifully. So I feel like when I'm reading these girls, especially in Brooklyn, and I grew up in Bay Ridge, so I when you talk about 72nd Street, in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, for heaven's sake, I know what's on the corner there. You know, I know where the bridge is from my house. If you ever got lost going home, all you had to do was look up, you know, and head in that direction. So I appreciate that you did that because I feel like you've given a voice not just to the Arab community, but a lot of women who will understand this. Traditionally, we're told you'll grow up, you'll get married, you'll have children, you'll probably go to college nowadays. That's sort of the norm. But I could really feel for, is it Daya?
Yes.
So the two women, the main women in this book, although I really did, I felt such a connection to Farida, who's sort of the grandmother, and Isra. She's sort of the 17-year-old in Palestine. She prefers reading books to entertaining all the suitors that her father chooses for her. And then we flash forward to Brooklyn in 2008, and 18-year-old Daya, who's Isra's oldest daughter, also has to meet potential husbands at the behest of her grandma, her grandmother, Farida. So it's just this shocking back and forth between the two. How hard was it for you to get into the heads of both, all three of these women? Because Farida is really, she's something else, that woman. Like, I picture her, I try to think of an actress who would play her on television. You know, she's tough as nails and really very, very sympathetic. Although I'm sure that's going to be not a popular thing that people think she's sympathetic.
I hope they think she's sympathetic. I really tried to draw all of the characters in a very three-dimensional way so that it's not black and white, victim, oppressor, and it's more of a very nuanced way of understanding why people do the things they do and how your upbringing affects your outlook on the world. And so it wasn't difficult for me to have these three generations. I felt like it was very necessary for the story to have a whole and three-dimensional feel about it, because one of the main things that I wanted readers to understand is that there is this cycle of trauma that is passed down between generations, and that having Farida, the grandmother, and her experience in Palestine in the refugee camps after they've been evacuated from their homes by the Israeli army, and then living in the refugee camps, having children, and then relocating to America in search of a better life. All of those hardships affect the decisions that she makes moving forward, raising her sons, her daughter-in-laws, her grandchildren. And it's very necessary to understand that when you are growing up in a house of trauma and abuse, it's very easy for that to trickle down among the generations. And the consequences are not just in that family. They're not just with Farida. We see them with her children. And then again, with Daya, with her grandchild. And so that was very important for me to establish. And so I felt like it was necessary for me to show all the generations.
And when you, which it's startling how clearly the reader is able to see Farida's backstory. And we then, because we have this backstory, we actually know how she's going to react in certain situations that arise further on in the book, and her intentions are always very, I want to say her intentions are always very good, because she loves her family. Mm-hmm. So I really did feel for her. And also, I think, again, we're going back to this topic of, it's such a timely book, especially in this Me Too movement, the oppression of women. It's just universal, and the things, the obstacles that we have to overcome, it's constant. So when I read this book, I felt sort of comforted knowing that, wow, you know, these are things that are really going on, and everybody's having these issues in some way, shape, or form, and you've just brought this to the forefront. When you submitted the idea to a publisher, or how did that work? Did you sort of come up with it? How did you find your agent, or was this through a writing class? How did you sort of get this book off the ground?
I wrote my first draft, and I found my agent. I submitted queries to agents, and there was lots of interest. I ended up, I'm just going to fast forward to when I
found
the agent that I actually like, which is my current agent. So I'll fast forward to that. It was actually on Twitter. I was anticipating the release of The Mothers by Britt Bennett.
Yep.
Wonderful, wonderful book. One of my favorites. And I realized that her her agent was Julia Carden. And I was following Britt on Twitter. And I saw her agent. I'm like, yes, I love that book.
Yeah.
With me, my agent.
You go, girl.
So, you know, because The Mothers is also about, yes, you know, the relationship between, you know, growing up and the traumas that you inherit from your parents, and how that affects your choices and your outlook on life. So I thought it was a very beautiful book, and she must have had a very great agent. So I emailed her agent, and she read the draft. She loved it. Julia, I love her. She has saved my life. Edit the book in a very deep way, and so after that we sold it. Yeah, she's been my hero.
And thankfully, so we thank all of those ladies collectively. Yes. Shout out for all of those wonderful people. Who came up with the title "A Woman Is No Man"? Because it really, that is the, if I could say, not only is it the title, it's the synopsis.
I'm really happy. It was a struggle settling on a title. We originally sold it under a different title. And then my editor and I wanted to make sure that we chose, my editor's Erin Wakes at HarperCollins. She is brilliant, amazing. I love her so much. So we wanted to make sure that we had a title that was representative of the work entirely. And so there was a line in the novel where Farida's daughter asks Farida if she could do something. Why can't she? I'm not going to say what it was. Why can't she do something? And Farida tells her, because a woman is no man. You're not, you can't do that. You're not a man. Like, don't compare yourself to your brothers.
Right.
You're not a man. And so that line of woman is not a man, a woman is no man, I felt was very representative of the theme of this very traditional conservative culture, in that not only are men and women expected to perform different roles in society, but that women are also seen as inferior to men in their abilities to do certain things. And so we decided that that was going to be the title of the book. And I really love this title because I feel like the whole purpose of the novel is to also show the ways in which women are more resilient than men and are more in charge of the outcome of the family values and the responsibility and the accountability that we have as women to make sure that our kids and that our families are raised in a way where we are empowered as women and that we're not shamed. And so I wanted to show the resiliency and strength of our women and the responsibility that they have. So it's a very twofold title.
It is. So. And when you read it, it's what I love about it is half the time you're saying it, you're reading A Woman Is No Man as one way with one inflection.
Yes.
And then midway through, you're reading that with a separate inflection. And I am telling you, this book will be on book discussion lists for the next, I don't know how many years. This is going to be one of those books. And this is it for 2019. This is the book discussion book for 2019. I really feel that. There's just so much going on. There's nuance, layer upon layer. It is a true onion. And so you said it in Brooklyn. because you know Brooklyn, you've lived there, and do you miss sort of that hustle and bustle of the city life? Because I live on Long Island now, and leaving Brooklyn, sometimes I sort of think, oh, wow, I miss my neighborhood, you know, because that's where I grew up. Do you miss any of that hustle bustle?
Oh, absolutely. I love Brooklyn's diversity, the cultures, the different scents in the street. I don't really get that here in North Carolina. It's very much plain, and I mean, I love North Carolina in its own way, but I do miss the cultural diversity that Brooklyn has to offer. And I think that's one of the reasons, besides my upbringing, that I chose to set the novel there, because I wanted to show that even though this family migrated to Brooklyn, which is the melting pot of America, they still had to face displacement, feeling straddled between two worlds, not entirely Arab, not entirely American, even in this culturally diverse place. I just felt it was very fitting to set it there.
Yeah, and so everybody is happy that you did. And I also, there's a little piece of the book where there's a bookstore that's involved in the story, which also has a really fabulous title. What can you tell us about the store name of the book of the bookstore in this book?
It was very shameless for
me. I love that. That's self-promotion. You go. I think that's awesome.
You know what? Why not?
Why not? That's right. Somebody has to do it.
I know. It's always been a dream of mine to have a bookstore / coffee shop called Books and Beans, where you get books and then you get coffee beans. And so that was the name of my Instagram page at the time, where I felt was very, it was a very good luck thing for me. It's how I got in contact with Book of the Month, how I became an ambassador. So I really, how I got in touch with so many publishers and read so many amazing galleries every month of books. And so I wanted that good luck charm to be inside my book. And so I named it Books and Beans, hopefully maybe a little wink at my readers who've been following me from the beginning.
Yeah, I thought it was great, because when I read that, I thought, wait a minute, I know that. Where do I know that from? And I had to stop and sort of think, what the heck? I know that name from somewhere. And then, of course, I realized it was from the Instagram account. And I thought, oh, for heaven's sake, look what she did here. Look at her.
Yeah, hopefully it wasn't too shameless. I was like, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to do that.
Yes. And I think the readers who follow Instagram will totally appreciate that piece is in there. I loved it. And you talked about being an ambassador for Book of the Month Club. One of the things I read was one of the pieces you had written. I don't remember exactly the context, but you mentioned how much you love the writing of Elizabeth Strout.
Oh, yes. She's one of Olive Kittredge is one of my top five favorite books.
It is. Yeah. And when we talked earlier, before we got on to the podcast, I was saying how I had done a book discussion for Olive Kittredge. I probably read the book 3 or 4 times, because just the way her narrative, her technique, her character development. I mean, I could go on and on, and I'm not even close to being able to interpret how much that book settles with me, what it does when I, you know, think about it and I go back and read it. So when I did the book discussion, we had half the room who either loved Olive or didn't love Olive. And then we talked about why. And then I would think that the half that really didn't love Olive at the end were so sympathetic, and they were like, we're going to go back and read it again, because you bring to it a different set of eyes. And of course, my name is Lucy Barton, and then she wrote the follow-up. The name just went out of my head. And there is a rumor out there, I don't know if this is true, that there may be a follow-up to Olive Kittredge in some way in the fall. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I'll just call you personally to find out what you think of it afterwards. We don't have to be on a podcast for all of that, for sure. Books and Beans. Let's talk about that really quick. Shout out to Elizabeth Strout. We love you. At Books and Beans, you started this Instagram account about how long, would you say?
I would say I started it about a year or so before I started writing. Maybe 2015.
Because I feel like I've been following it forever, so I don't know. Yeah. It just seems like it's always popping up in my feed. So it never occurred to me that it wasn't there.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I'm like I said, I just feel like I've been following it forever. And all the readers follow it. You have a huge following on there, which is just amazing. Again, folks, I will add the links to all of these things that we're talking about here. And the mothers also will talk about, I'll put a link for that book so people can access that. Also an excellent book discussion book. So when do you hit the tour circuit for A Woman Is No Man?
I start on release date, March 5th, and then I head out to a few cities nearby, and then I come to New York, of course. And then that's about it for now. I think that's it for now. And then maybe later I'll hit up some more cities.
Do you feel like this is the beginning of sort of a runaway train? Because I feel like we're on one side of this, and once March 5th hits, it's a completely different playing field.
Yeah, this month, actually, I'm not sure if you were familiar with, but A Woman Is No Man was a February Book of the Month selection.
Yes.
And so I'm already reading reviews from readers that have picked A Woman Is No Man as their Book of the Month pick. I can see them tag it on Instagram. It's so exciting for me because I've wanted to be a writer since I was a kid because I was a reader, but I've never actually wrote anything until I started writing A Woman Is No Man. Mm-hmm. And so it just feels so surreal to me that I went from an ordinary, Instagram loving person to like now people are reading my book. It's just weird. Yeah. And exciting and thrilling. And so I'm so nervous and so thrilled.
Yeah, I can't wait to follow up with you at some point and sort of say, all right, so what are your readers saying? Because it would really be interesting to see how the readers react to your characters. I'm sure that's every writer's goal and dream is to find out how people respond. And you will be getting all kinds of crazy questions about the characters, which is what's so exciting. Mm-hmm. So I can't thank you enough for joining us today. I'm glad we finally got this all settled. I can't thank you enough for saying yes to the dress and sitting down and talking to me about this incredible book called A Woman Is No Man. Listeners, you are in for a treat. Readers, you are in for a bigger treat when you get this book in your hands. Etep, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure. I hope we talk again soon.
Yes, you will. Listeners, you can find Etef on her homepage, which is etefrum.com, as well as Twitter and the Instagram account Books and Beans. Again, I will provide all those links on the podcast page for this episode, so you can find that there. The book comes out March 5th. And once again, I can't thank all of you enough for joining us today, for keeping us on your top shelf. Remember to follow us on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and wherever you find most podcasts. Don't forget to check out our fabulous Merrick Library website at merricklibrary.org. It's a winner. Special thanks, as always, to Merrick Library Director Ellen Firer and the Merrick Library Board of Directors for getting us off the ground and onto the airways. And until next time, remember to keep us on your top shelf.